Ellie, for heaven's sake.
Mr. Mellons, you've got to get this girl out of here.
Calvin, your interest in that girl wouldn't go beyond police duty, would it?
Well, he tells me about your mother. Well, we don't know anything about yours except that she has four legs and barked.
Cut it out. Ellie, where's my hammer?
How should I know?
You had it in the cellar.
Well, then that's where it is.
Only it isn't.
If you don't go back upstairs, you'll never eat again.
Okay, don't get mad.
Ellie, what you call death may be only the temporary absence of life.
You're a witch.
Someone tried to kill me last night, and I know who.
It was just a dream.
I'm not staying here to be killed by some maniac.
Hi, this is Lauren Marie Taylor from Friday the 13th Part 2 and Girls Night Out. And you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to episode 104 of The Hysteria Continues. And this time...
Stop. Hammer time!
Yes, indeed. It is hammer time.
Excellent.
Because we are covering Blood and Lace, not to be confused with Mario Bava's seminal 1964 Giallo Blood and Black Lace. But,
not to be confused with Dirty Dancing.
Or that one either, no. But there's another listener pick, and actually we're absolutely delighted to have with us Kieran Edwards, who picked Blood and Lace. So, Kieran, it is 3 a.m. on your time zone. This is the Transatlantic slash a podcast after all. So how are you doing, Kieran? And thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be back. Well, I'm actually a little bit nervous, to be honest.
Why is that? What, because you picked this and you're wondering what we think?
No, actually, before you called, I was in my kitchen drinking a chai latte, as I normally do, and opening all my kitchen cabinet drawers, as I normally do, when I saw that my hammer's missing. So I've locked myself in my bedroom, and hopefully I can make it through this podcast alive.
Well, that is always a danger of doing a slasher movie podcast. You never know if there's going to be any crazed fans out there. Do we, Eric?
Well,
where are you, Eric?
I'm in my bedroom. Why?
Oh, okay. You're not in. Mm. You're not in Oakland.
Oh, maybe not.
No. Okay.
No. I mean, there's no one else in here that I can see besides. Ellie's mother.
Ellie's mother. Oh, right. Okay. Oh, she's in the bed. So have you set up a little shrine to Blood and Lace? Have you?
I guess you guys know Ellie's mother by now. I think we all know her. Does she always sleep here with strawberry syrup on her face?
I think so. Well, it's Eric's usually sleep with something on his face, aren't you, Eric? So what? Okay. Well, it's going to be one of those shows, I think, isn't it?
Yes, it will be.
It will be. So, but no, we're very pleased to have you with us, Kieran, and hopefully you'll live for the next hour and 40 odd minutes, and maybe very odd minutes. But and talking of odds, Eric, how are you doing?
Oh, Justin, I'm so tired. It's like 11 o'clock in the morning and I've only got 9 hours sleep.
Oh, Eric,
shut up.
you shouldn't rub it in. So we're talking of the sleep deprived. Nathan, how are you doing on this beautiful sunny morning?
Sunny. I'm actually doing really, really well. I broke into someone's house and found this amazing hammer.
Oh, okay. I can see this is a breaking story, isn't it? So,
yes.
Joseph, how are you doing?
Justin, hello.
I don't get that.
He didn't say that in this movie, though.
It's an Uncle Leo reference.
I see. Mm-hmm. Is that from Seinfeld?
Yes.
Because I only ever watched one episode of Seinfeld, and I didn't think it was very funny.
That's one more
you're missing out.
You must have watched the first season.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was that not very funny?
Nope.
No. Okay. Right. Well, before we get on to the main attraction, let's do what we normally do, which is talk a little bit about what we've been watching recently. And as you are our guest, Kieran, have you been watching anything of note?
Yes. Well, I thought that since we were covering the 70s proto-slasher that I would get in the mood by watching some other 70s proto-slashers. So the first one I saw was Scream Bloody Murder. I had high hopes for that one because the people behind this film, they also wrote The Severed Arm, which I've always liked, and they both share some similar elements, shall we say. It's kind of a cross between Psycho and The Collector and The Killer as a Hook for a Hand, so, you know, I should have loved it, but I only thought it was okay, probably because the actor playing The Killer was just kind of dull and not really menacing. Doesn't have much in the way of choice dialogue either, except for what you highlighted in your review, Justin. The woman who plays his mother and the, shall we say, collectee is good. It's got some good kills, decent cinematography. And oh, and you get to see a young Angus Scrimm. And by young, I mean 45, 50, yeah, somewhere about there. So it's definitely worth a watch, but I don't think I'll go out of my way to see it again.
I haven't seen that for years. I've have to look back at my review, but I remember that was the one, the first film filmed in gonography, wasn't it? Or the first gonography?
First and possibly last.
Yes, I seem to remember. I seem to have some kind of interesting freak out in the river, doesn't it? Where it all gets very psychedelic.
That freak out happens at least two or three times in the film, yeah.
Well, has anyone else had the pleasure of that film, Scream Bloody Murder?
The title sounds familiar, but I can't recall if I've seen it or not.
Well, there are two Scream Bloody Murders. There's one from the 70s, and there's an early 2000 era Bloody Murder. Which is a lot sillier than the 70s film, but... Wow. I've seen them both, and they're both entertaining in their own varying ways.
Yeah.
What about you, Nathan?
I've seen Scream Bloody Murder, and the only thing I can really remember about it is the killing of the maid.
Mm.
And I thought it was unintentionally funny, and it probably shouldn't have been, but I kind of thought it was.
Well, actually, the unintentionally funny part is when... the owner of the house where the maid lives in, comes in and tries to defend herself. And she is, shall we say, an octogenarian.
Is that like an octopus? No, it's a little joke. But can you remind me what happens at that point? Does she...
You know, she has a cane. She moves very slowly, trying to defend herself, and it's not a fair fight.
Yeah. Fair enough. You said you've been watching a few proto slashers. Anything?
Yeah, the second one I watched was The Love Butcher.
Oh yeah.
Ooh,
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's a great title. Coincidentally, it's also the name of an unreleased Barry White album. This is definitely more of a comedy horror film, and it seems to have had this, I guess we could say, a troubled production history. But I think all of its disjointedness and attempts at humor work because the titular character, who's actually a gardener, is very interesting, and the actor Eric Stern is pretty great in the role. It's not particularly violent, but the few murder set pieces are pretty tense. It also does a really good job of not revealing the source of his psychosis until the end of the film. I actually enjoyed it a lot, and it's definitely a rewatch for me.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, so I take it everyone else has seen Love Butcher. It's another one I reviewed on Hysteria Lives.
Yes, great film. Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Suitably 70s and weird.
Yes.
Very much so, yeah.
And it doesn't really go the way you expect it with the hero and heroine of the film. You kind of don't really expect the outcome of their characters.
That's true. I mean, the only clue is that it's a 70s film, and most 70s films by rule are kind of have a dark ending, shall we say.
And also I think it's interesting because like we talk about with the film we're going to be talking about today, but with proto slashers, because the rules hadn't been set, they sometimes go off in directions you, like you say, you don't expect them to. And this is a film like that. So, Eric, you've not seen Love Butcher.
I haven't, no.
No, it's worth a watch.
It's definitely the best film Don Jones made. That might be unpopular with Nathan, because I know he likes The Forest, but I think this is a little better than The Forest.
I don't know, because I think I like them both so much. I don't really know which one I think is better.
A colonoscopy is better than the forest.
You're ridiculous, and I'm going to pick the forest.
No.
And look what you've done.
Not for another 5 years, anyway, surely.
Yeah.
I'm going to pepper some Nathan picks throughout.
Okay.
Excellent. Okay.
Right.
There's one last film I did get to see finally, which was The Centerfold Girls.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so I'm actually kind of surprised and ashamed that I hadn't seen the film before. You're right that it's put together like an Amicus anthology film. Because the first part is kind of like Last House on the Left. Second part's like an American Giallo. And the third part's like a rape revenge film with the emphasis on revenge, thankfully. Kind of looks like a 70s TV movie of the week that was produced by Cinemax. And that's what makes it a great film, I think. And all the calendar girls, all of them are actually very likable. And Andrew Prine is just, he's great in everything he does, I think. But he's got a less flashy role than that of the Love Butcher, but I think he's more menacing. Yeah, I look forward to you guys covering it someday. I think you should.
Yeah, well, that's one I reviewed on History Lives not that long ago, and it's kind of it's why the 70s gets that kind of the sick 70s title, really, doesn't it? Or the and as we'll be talking about again with Blood and Lace, which is kind of infamously the sickest GP or PG movie ever made.
Mm-hmm.
Centerfold Girls is really good.
Yeah, that's all I've watched so far.
Cool.
Recently.
Okay, well, thank you, Kieran. Nathan, how about you?
The only thing I've watched besides Blood and Lace recently was Herschel Gordon Lewis's film, The Gore Girls, which I absolutely love that film. I think it's hysterical. It's so ridiculous. And I feel like I've talked about it on the podcast before, but I mean, it's the only movie I've seen where a woman can get her nipples cut off and one pours out white milk and the other one pours out chocolate milk.
That's anatomically correct, surely. Yeah?
It's got to be, yeah. But
yeah,
in this movie, it makes sense.
I think he did that, didn't he? Because he wanted it to be cartoonish, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. Yeah. I mean, it's so over. It's probably the most over-the-top film he did, and that's saying a lot. Because he made some really over-the-top movies.
I'm trying to think if I've seen The Gore Girls. I think I have, but maybe not for a long, long time. But I'm certainly aware of it. What about you guys? Have you anyone else seen it?
No, but I am a Kajagorgor girl.
Eric, you haven't seen it? That gives me ideas.
Oh, dear. Here we go. See, Eric, don't encourage him.
Yeah. From what I remember, two things. Is Henny Youngman in that film?
Yes.
Okay. And is that the film where the film is, because it was such a short running time, he had to like have two talking balloon heads for about 20 minutes?
No, that's a different movie. That's the
Gore. That's a different film. Okay. All right. I get those two confused.
I would say the Gore Girls is better. It's a little more entertaining. And one thing I like about the Gore Girls is, of course, it was a cheap production, and it's about, you know, strippers getting killed. So any scene where they're stripping, he had to use like stock music, like free, call it? Public domain, music.
Royalty free.
It's ridiculous. The music he's playing for these stripping scenes.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you, Nathan. And is that's everything you've watched this week?
Yes.
Because we're also, because I say, we are, again, we're putting one in the bank, because we're recording a week after the last, we recorded Slum Party Massacre, which we released today, which this episode is going out in 2 weeks' time. So, again, it's one of those kind of time-traveling podcasts. But Joseph, how about you?
Well, the only thing I've watched is something that you and I know Eric has watched. I'm not sure about Nathan or Kieran, but I watched the found footage film Creep, which is I'm not going to go into too many spoilers here, but it's basically about a dying man who wants to have his last moments, I guess you'd say, documented on tape for his son, who he fears he will leave behind. And he wants his son to know who his father is. That's pretty much all I'm going to say. You know, by now the whole found footage thing has really kind of grown, you know, tired, very tired, I'd say. And this is coming from someone who likes a lot of these films, but this is kind of a boost to the subgenre. It's kind of realistically and kind of organically scary, I'd say, especially for, you know, a few people I know. But it's also another film I really can't go into too much without spoiling it. But I just to say that I found it, you know, highly effective, very well acted. It's one of those films you can't really look away from. It's just really well done all around. It's kind of I'd say it's the It Follows of the found footage genre. What about you, Justin?
I really enjoyed it. I think my interest has peaked when I heard Patrick from Scream Queens mention it. I can't remember if it was on the show or on the Facebook group, but it was. It was on Netflix in the UK, and it's got 1 star out of 5, which obviously isn't very encouraging. And I was quite surprised. Having said that, every film that I like on Netflix has always got really, really bad reviews on Netflix. So the people who rate films on Netflix have no. Have no sort of quality control whatsoever. So anyway, but I thought the film was really good. I kind of went into it relatively blind, and it's a bit of a roller coaster because it kind of does stuff you think it's going to do, but then goes off in different directions. And it kept me guessing all the way through. And like you say, you don't really want to give too much away because that would spoil the fun for anyone watching it. But having said that, it was one of the few films I've seen recently that was incredibly suspenseful and very funny as well. I think it's one of the few films I've seen recently that actually does comedy and horror very well. And then when I say comedy, it's kind of... it's almost like a Curb Your Enthusiasm style comedy. Almost, it's that kind of like makes you feel kind of, you know, uncomfortable and you know, squirm in your seat kind of comedy.
It's kind of like one person in the film will do something just kind of off the wall, and you almost expect the person behind the camera just to kind of, you know, get out from behind the camera, look at it, and you hear boom, 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 ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But yeah, I get what you're saying about that.
Yeah, well, I thought it was great. I thought it was really good, and it's interesting. I think you only ever see two people in the film. It's a film with just two people in it. I mean, it's not all set in one location. It's set in different locations, and you hear people on phones and things like that. But you never see anyone else apart from the two main characters. And I thought it was very effective. Apparently, it's been sat on the shelf for a couple of years. It's been, and obviously it bypassed cinemas and has gone straight to Netflix. I'm not even sure if it's out on Blu-ray, but yeah, definitely worth a watch. But you saw it as well, Eric.
I did, yeah, just because you guys were talking about it during the week. I'd never heard of it in my life, and as you said, I went in completely blind, not knowing anything about the film, apart from that it was found footage. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. Probably not as much as you two seem to have, but I would still highly recommend it. The creep of the title is very, like, I suppose the one thing you can give away is that it involves a very strange individual. Whose behavior is very, very bizarre from the get-go. So that's not really a spoiler. You know, 5 minutes in, you're thinking, ooh, this man is a bit odd.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, cool.
But no, I did. And yeah. Again, harking back to Slumber Party Massacre, it's a neat 77 minutes as well. So you definitely won't be bored by it.
No, absolutely. So what about you, Kieran and Nathan? Have you caught it yet?
Not yet, no. Okay. I've been meaning to. I've only heard about it actually in the last few weeks. So, and I usually like most of what the Duplass brothers do. So,
what else have they done?
I know he's on The League, isn't he? That FX show, that comedy.
Mm-hmm. He's on The League. There's that show. There's that movie Cyrus. I don't know if you ever saw that with John C. Reilly.
No,
that's pretty good income for one. They're kind of responsible for the term mumblecore, for better or for worse.
Mm. Oh, if I'd known that beforehand, I probably wouldn't have watched Creep.
Yeah, exactly. So I think they've, you know, they're pretty prolific also. So I think there's a lot of stuff out there of varying quality. So.
Apparently, Creep is supposed to be a trilogy, from what I'm gathering. Each film following a different quote-unquote creep. We'll see what happens with that, but that sounds kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, it does.
What about you, Nathan? Have you watched it yet?
No, but I'm going to watch it right after we finish the podcast. I don't know anything about it except what you guys just said. So
yeah, don't go to the IMDb or don't even look at the cover art, because even the cover art, as bland as it is, almost kind of just paints a picture, and you don't really want anything. You don't want your judgment clouded in any way. Just go in, and watch. That's it, pretty much.
I really like blind watches, and there are some times I wish that I could just erase a certain movie from my memory and then rewatch it fresh.
Mind you, Nathan, there's sometimes I wish I could erase certain movies from my memory and not watch them again, but no names mentioned, obviously.
This is also probably the only found footage movie I've ever seen that's resolutely shaky cam free as well.
Mm.
Yes, which is a blessing. Yeah.
Because I wasn't, I didn't even know who the Duplass brothers were or anything. You know, I'd never seen these people before. And it wasn't until afterwards I read up that they did, you know, best known for comedy. And you wouldn't have known it from this, although it's from, is it Jason Blum or the Blumhouse, whatever productions that does? He's, and from what I read, he said
Blumhouse.
Is it?
No, Bumhouse.
Bumhouse. No, that's a different type of production house, Eric.
Oh, sorry.
And he sorts, because they're behind all of the Evil Dead remake, weren't they, and things like that. Anyway, but he sort of said to them that, you know, to make a horror film, you need a boo scene every 10 minutes or so. And you do get that through this, but it's surprising how effective the suspense is for filmmakers who have no kind of history of horror or thrillers whatsoever, as far as I'm aware.
I like how the jump scares in this film actually really aren't jump scares. They kind of winks at you with them a little bit.
Mm, mm. Yeah. No, it's inventive like the rest of the film. So, but be interested to hear what you think, Nathan. So feedback next time. So, that was everything, Joseph, was it?
Yes, that's it.
Okay, right. Eric, we haven't had you yet, have we?
No, but you were saying there about a Blumhouse production needs a boo scene every so often, but the Blumhouse ones need a poo scene every so often.
Is that your joke of the week?
No.
Was that your joke of the week? Oh.
No, it's actually better. That was actually better than my joke of the week.
Okay.
My joke of the week this week is kind of poor. But
shocking.
Just to go back to Scream Bloody Murder, we have actually covered the early noughties Scream Bloody Murder, because it was called Bloody Murder in the States and called Scream Bloody Murder over here in the UK and Ireland.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Episode 77.
So there's three Scream Bloody Murders then.
Is there?
Yeah, the other one I was talking about, it's not Bloody Murder, the one we covered. It's
You're right, there is another one.
It's the one with the really wacky ending that Nathan and I have talked about before.
It's a horror spoof.
One of my favorite horror endings, one of them,
yeah.
of all time.
Okay, well, I've only watched one film. Well, apart from Creep, I've only watched one film, well, apart from Blood and Lips, obviously, and that is what could be called a proto-slasher. It's a Jess Franco movie from 1970 called She Killed in Ecstasy. And it's about a doctor who's cast out of his profession because of his bizarre genetic experiments, and this leads him to commit suicide, and his wife then goes on a sort of revenge mission against the four doctors she deems responsible. So it is kind of a slasher movie. In fact, I think I'll pick it for the next podcast. Now, I know Jess Franco has kind of a reputation of being a bit naff at times, and although we all love Bloody Moon, but this one is actually very coherent and fast-paced, and for a Franco movie, it has a strong narrative thread through it, although still it's wonderfully weird and wacky. And it has, I know, Justin, you're a fan of the kind of set design and wacky interiors of something like $5 for an August Moon. Mm. And you get plenty of that in this film. You got sort of really psychedelic late 60s, early 70s decor in these apartments. He actually utilizes this strange block of apartments that are actually in real life are called Xanadu. Which makes me want to go there even more, which he's used in lots of his films. But I loved it. And I think, you know, if you're not a Jess Franco fan, this probably would be a good entry point for it. It's called She Killed in Ecstasy. It is kind of slasherific. You know, the body count is just, it's only four or five. But, I would give it a big thumbs up. But then again, I do love weird and wacky 70s Euro horror, so.
Mm. Okay. Well, I'm not, my Jess Franco... understanding doesn't go much beyond Bloody Moon and Faceless, and a few. I've seen a bit of Vampirus Lesbos, that type of stuff, and also a few other ones he's done, but not very much. Also, Oasis of the Zombies, I think, was one of his, wasn't it?
Yes, although Jean Roland might have something to do with that one as well. I think the two of them kind of worked on that one.
Didn't he do
one of the Ilsa movies?
He did Ilsa the Wicked Warden, yeah.
Because I saw that one.
Yeah.
Well, somebody's furiously typing away. It's like there's a quiz on.
And Eric's losing.
No, we all know who the loser was in the quiz.
Eric. Yeah, I think that's getting quite old now, isn't it? Yeah, I think that was both of us, wasn't it, Eric?
Oh, Justin, let it go. You keep going on about it.
Okay.
Eric this episode.
No, you're not.
Eric made me mad earlier this week on Facebook, so I'm supposed to be bullied.
I can't remember bullying why. Him. What did I
you
do?
Made an off, you made an off-the-cuff remark about me and Nathan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I probably should have been mad about it, but I wasn't.
Yeah,
you
know,
and you said, and you said that you were feeling very Inga that night. So
I was feeling very Inga that night.
What did you say, Eric? Not wishing to stir.
Something about insinuating that Nathan and Joseph might have had intimate relations at some stage in the past.
Oh,
I don't remember that part.
Well, we know who you had intimate relations with, so there.
Well, let's not go there, shall we? This is for behind the scenes later.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've all had a few drinks. So, Eric, was that everything you done?
Yeah, that is everything I've done.
Okay, well. Apart from Creep, a couple of other bits I saw, but the one film I'll talk about briefly is The Battery from 2012, which is yet another zombie apocalypse film. But it's kind of almost like the Mumblecore zombie apocalypse film. Has anyone seen it?
Yeah.
Mm. Did you like it? I thought it was very boring.
I thought it was incredibly overrated. Because it came to the horror festival over here in Dublin a couple of years back with all this hype. Now, I didn't actually see it at the horror festival. It was a clash with something else I wanted to see. So I caught it on DVD or Blu-ray. And yeah, I just found it boring.
Well, it's kind of, in some ways, I like the idea that obviously a zombie apocalypse or the end of the world is going to be quite thrilling and scary in lots, certainly at the start. But after a while, if you survive it, it's also going to have huge passages of utter boredom. But it seems a bit of a strange choice to make a zombie movie where you focus on the periods of utter boredom.
There's a long scene of two guys in the back of a car.
Yes, which normally wouldn't be too bad, but in this context, it was
in a Blumhouse production, it would be okay.
Yeah, but in this context, it was just incredibly boring, wasn't it? It was just kind of that scene in the back of the car literally did go on for 20 minutes, didn't it? Of nothing.
Yeah, I just could not see what the fuss was about the film at all.
No, it was very it was just basically it was just the passages of boredom of the zombie apocalypse, and that's what it was based on, sitting around and bickering, arguing and eating tin goods. That was it, really, wasn't it? So not only that, it's an hour and 41 minutes. I didn't even keep it to a trim 90 minutes. I didn't understand what they were trying to do with it, really. It was a very low budget. It's kind of, you know, it was just like it's something you could bung on in the background and do your ironing to, or have a, you know, phone your mum on the phone while it's going on in the background. But apart from that, I wouldn't recommend it. So, but I take it no one else has seen The Battery.
Well, I got a new battery for my car.
It's probably more exciting.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I don't really want to.
No. What about you, Kieran?
Yeah, I haven't seen it. There's like an initial wave, I think, of like good critical reviews about it, and then there's some sort of backlash afterwards, I remember noticing, and then after reading the backlash, it just I just lost interest in seeing the film.
Mm-hmm. Have any of you seen Pontypool?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was so... I mean, you guys might have liked it, and everybody else seems to like it, but I have... It's been a really long time since I've been that bored, since we covered The Crimson. That's when I was last that bored.
I'm sort of not as hard on the movie as that, but I did... Yeah, go on. I said hard on. I liked the idea, the Twilight Zone-y idea of sort of language becoming kind of infectious and a virus, a zombie-like virus. But then after a while, it just got a bit tedious and boring.
Yes, definitely. And I agree. I mean, I would agree with that. Like, the reason I wanted to watch it is I loved the plot. I thought it sounded great. But when I was watching it, I was watching it at Grant's, and we were both just like, how is this movie going to go anywhere? I'm like, I feel like this thing has been on for like an eon.
I love that movie, and I will fight you all to the death for it.
I love that movie as well.
Do you?
Oh, two versus two.
What about you, Joseph?
Deciding votes.
I don't remember. I don't think I've seen it.
Oh,
you got to watch it, Joseph, so you can break the tie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pontypool. I know I've heard of it, but I don't remember watching it if I have seen it.
Mm. It's very Canadian.
Although, isn't Pontypool a town in Wales as well? It sounds like it should be. Mm.
Yeah. But funny enough, because there are, in America and Canada, there are lots of towns based or named after British counterparts, aren't there? And there is actually a town called Toya in America.
Did you know that? It's like a paradise, I'd say.
Well, I don't know about that. But but you should look that up, and maybe you can go on holiday there.
I might go live there.
Well, yes, I don't think they've got Wi-Fi.
I want to be inside Toya all the time.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. Would you switch sides for Toya, Eric?
No.
Right.
Not even Toya could do that.
No.
Well, I don't imagine you'd actually be switching sides, but never mind.
How about for Stefania?
Possibly, Stefania. Yeah.
Yes, well.
That would push me over the edge, yeah.
Where is Stefania? Where is she? She should be here.
she's actually in Kieran's closet with a hammer.
But you all know that, you know, she's so young, she's got her whole life ahead of her.
Yeah.
What are you trying to say? Nothing.
Well, that was 1996. So anyway.
I want to do right now is go back and watch Fatal Frames now.
I can watch that every day. I love it so much.
So do I. Yeah.
Have you ever seen Fatal Frames, Kieran?
A long time ago, yeah. It's very rewatchable.
It is.
Right. Okay. Well, I think we should probably move on to the main attraction, which of course means
Hammer Time.
And here is the trailer for Blood and Lace.
Yeah, what you call death may be only the temporary absence of life.
You're a witch.
Terror strikes again and again.
Someone tried to kill me last night, and I know who.
It was just a dream.
I'm not staying here to be killed by some maniac.
Blood and Lace. How many faces does terror wear? How many lives can one live?
That's the way you like them, huh? Nice and young?
Don't worry, Walter. You and your little slut can have each other. I'm clearing out.
Searched through the dark corridors of the unknown, only to find the unbearable.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you strong enough to handle shock after shock after shock as desire drives a bargain with death? Can you refrain from cowering in fear as terror strikes again and again and again from its hiding place in the darkest corner of the unknown? If so, then maybe you're ready for a little film called Blood and lace. Not to be confused with blood and black lace. The reason I had to put that together instead of doing the practical thing and just read from the back of a video box is because I don't believe this film ever had a proper VHS release in the U.S. at least. In case anyone hasn't watched it yet, it's basically about a teenager whose father's absent, whose mother's murdered, and she gets placed in possibly the worst orphanage in the world while the mother's killer is still on the loose. I first found out about this movie 30 years ago when I bought the Psychotronic Encyclopedia of Film, and I saw that amazing poster for the first time and the review that called it one of the sickest PG-rated films ever. And I was intrigued, of course, but I couldn't find a copy. 10 years later, when I was living in San Francisco, there was an amazing video store called, of course, Le Video, which is still around, but barely, and that's another story. But they were very good at stocking bootleg VHS copies of various horror and exploitation films from around the world, and they had a copy of it. So when I rented it, I realized two things. One, the only thing on the poster that's in the film is the hammer. And two, Mel, the cook from Alice, is a very, very sleazy man. In fact, every character in the film is, shall we say, deeply flawed. And strangely enough, that did not make me dislike the film at all. Possibly because its PG rating prevents you from witnessing anything gratuitously disgusting. The acting is, to put it mildly, varied. But Gloria Graham, who plays the head of the orphanage, is quite disturbing and quite fun to watch. The film is everything you can ask for. It's got catfights, meat cleavers, library music that's from a 50s sci-fi movie, bodies and freezers, and some pioneering slasher elements, including a hammer cam and a man in a Freddy Krueger-ish outfit with a mask that looks like George C. Scott at the end of Firestarter. It has also one of the most shockingly cynical endings that you'll see in a film. And yeah, I enjoyed it a great deal, and I hope that you, dear listener, will also enjoy it. Let's see what other people think about the film. Eric, what are your thoughts on this movie?
Yeah, okay, well, I think that's a terrific opening with the obviously the John Carpenter, well, John Carpenter was inspired by the opening with the hammer cam, as you call it. And although the effect of the actual slaying of the two people in the bed is kind of clumsily handled, I mean, it's sort of, the hammer seems to almost bounce off their heads rather than sort of penetrate the flesh. And the victims don't seem to struggle in any way, even though like one blow doesn't kill them. Why don't they move? Why don't they go, even? They just sort of lie there and sort of take it, kind of like Justin.
Eric,
is that I do. Sorry,
is that another your joke of the week? We haven't had.
It is.
Oh, no.
It's going to be.
No, it's not that one.
Oh, Hector, sorry.
Don't apologise, Tom. You better pump the organ today.
Carry on.
Okay, and I love the superbly sleazy twist at the end, which I'm not going to reveal, but. It's the middle section I'm not 100% sure about. I mean, I do like parts of it, but other bits of it feel kind of TV movie-ish to me. And it reminds me very much of a film of the same vintage that everyone else seems to love except me, and that's Whoever Slew Auntie Rue, which again is set in kind of this orphanage run by a sort of Hitler-like female figure. I think the score is kind of weird in places as well. It's scored as if it's a 1930s adventure serial like Flash Gordon or something, which I think it's fun to hear, but I don't think it's appropriate at all for the feature. I do love the fact that all the orphans are like 30-somethings. It's, you know, it's completely outdoing the trend that, you know, of Beverly Hills 90210, and I'm thinking particularly of Andrea Zuckerman. It does have a great sort of 70s feel, and has a grimy sort of grindhouse feel. Gloria Graham is great as the villain in it, and I do think that you know, the scene where she's taunting the teen she has sort of tied up in the attic for trying to run away, and she taunts her by drinking a glass of water in front of her is supremely sadistic and quite funny. You were saying the sinister burnt man who runs around kind of in the Freddy Krueger shirt reminded you of George C. Scott. I got hints of Rod Steiger from him. Yeah. Is anyone else? Yeah. And also, it has kind of an odd feel, the film, because it seems incredible. Like, from an outsider, it seems incredibly easy for these kids to escape if they really want to. I mean, there's no heavy security in this place. All they have to do is run. I don't see what the problem is. And it's also interesting to see that there is a female character in this called Bunch. I mean, is Bunch really a name in America?
No, I've never heard of anybody named Bunch.
Yeah, a last name, maybe, but not a first name.
Yeah. I love the scene where she gives herself a makeover, actually, and she ends up looking like she's been shot 6 times by Homer Simpson's makeup gun. And of course, there's that wonderful catfight she has straight out of an 80s soap opera. She has a catfight with Ellie over a boy, obviously. Overall, I did enjoy the movie. I'm not sure as I'm as enthusiastic about it as everyone else in this podcast. I'm not 100% sure what your views are. I like the beginning, I like the end. In the middle, it plods a bit for me, although there are certain scenes that are effective in there. As far as early 70s proto-slashers go, it's pretty decent. It reminded me of a made-for-TV movie, but a pretty darn sleazy one at that. It's not particularly gory, though. As you say, the poster does kind of oversell the movie in the gore aspect, but I can see why it has the label of being the sickest PG movie ever, because sort of thematically it is. Good, but not brilliant, in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair. I would argue that the disorienting feel of the music and the pace are just what make it uniquely 70s, at least in my mind. But I can see why there are various tedious spots. Be curious if there's any sort of rewatchability going forward, where those tedious spots become more interesting as you watch it again. But time will tell, I suppose. What are your thoughts on the movie, Nathan?
I really, really like it. I actually didn't find any of it tedious or boring. Like, I was completely drawn into it. Like, it's, especially with the opening scene, I do kind of agree with Eric, you know, the character, the deaths are kind of clumsy, but I mean, I was okay with it because I love the hammer cam, and we get the hammer cam, you know, more than once. So, I mean, I just love, it's almost like the hammer's just attached to the camera, which I just like the way they shot that. Gloria Graham is incredible as Mrs. Deer. I kind of thought she was just misunderstood.
Really?
You're very forgiving.
Well, we don't know what her life was like before she started this orphanage.
She was a serial killer, though.
Well,
we don't know what Jeffrey Dahmer's life was like.
We all have our, bad sides.
I don't know if it's necessarily her that's the serial killer, or if it's Uncle Leo who's the serial killer.
Mm. This is Nathan trying to justify the fact that he's a junkie.
How dare you? And it was awesome to see Uncle Leo back when he was, I wouldn't say young, but younger. Especially for anybody that's a Seinfeld fan, which I am. And I'm glad Eric brought up the scene with Mrs. Deer taunting the girl with the water, because I thought that was such a cruel scene. And, that did kind of make me not want to root for Mrs. Deer, because I thought that's kind of going a little overboard. But, and you guys have brought up the ending. That ending is just great. I mean, it's so 70s to me. Like we mentioned earlier, when we were talking about the Love Butcher, the 70s just kind of had this way of having these like cynical or, not happy endings. And The Mask. I love The Mask. The killer wears stalking the orphanage grounds. Mm-hmm. This movie throws everything at you, which I love, and the cat fight is hilarious. It's so much fun. It's like an old it feels like it's right out of like an 80s like a Women in Prison movie or something. But and I like the time when Mrs. Deer slaps Ellie like multiple times. That was a really funny scene too. But I mean, thumbs up from me. I mean, it's so much fun.
Cool. Yeah, no, I agree. I definitely enjoy the film for its many bizarre elements. So, what are your opinions on the film, Joseph?
By all rights, I really probably shouldn't like it, but I actually like it a lot. It, you know, like everyone's saying, it's suitably 70s. I like the killer's outfit. He kind of reminds me of Tor Johnson dunked his head in porridge or something.
That's Tor Johnson, George C. Scott, and Rod Steiger.
Yeah.
Toya.
Hey!
I love that every character in this film, even the protagonist, everyone's just so sleazy, and the acting's just kind of melodramatic. The writing's all melodramatic, and just a bunch of people you wouldn't mind kind of gathering up inside of a confined space and, you know, setting fire to it. Just very, very disturbing individuals. You know, like you said, a really, really great cynical ending. The identity of the killer is fairly obvious, but, you know, so what? I don't know. It's just it's a lot of sleazy 70s fun. I like, you know, the Hammer stuff. Even the more talky scenes where it kind of becomes I wouldn't really want to call it a kind of a crime film, but I guess it has that kind of aesthetic. Even that stuff really didn't bore me. Typically, you know, when you're following someone who's investigating the goings on, I kind of drone out because I feel any slasher film that has to kind of segue into, you know, cops investigating the crime, I just find that stuff boring. But here, I don't know, it held my interest for some reason. I do like that opening murder with the killer killing the couple in bed. I like how he hits the woman a couple times, and then when it shows the man, he just kind of opens his eyes and looks up. Doesn't even bother to move or anything. He just lays there. And then he gets hit a couple times, and then when you think it's all over, the killer, you know, sets fire to the room, and the guy just kind of falls out of bed and just kind of writhes around very unconvincingly. It's not staged very well. The whole movie is kind of like that. The choreography is just kind of all over the place. But I don't know. There's just something about this film that's just kind of endearing, you know, in a kind of kooky, off-the-wall manner. But yeah, I mean, big thumbs up for me.
Cool. Yeah, I think for me, whenever the cop scenes or the investigation scenes happen, the only thing that draws my interest is I just say to myself, that's Mel the cook from Alice. That's Mel the cook from Alice. I just say that a few times. Yeah.
I always remember him from Loverboy.
Oh, yeah.
Patrick goes, come on out here!
Yeah, so... well, then, what are your opinions on the film, Justin?
Well, I adore this film. I think it's great. I mean, I've got the poster. I've got the original poster, which I quite often have up in the hallway. What? Did I hear a giggle there?
No, it's probably just me saying excellent, but the word not coming out properly.
No, sorry. I'm just used to Eric.
You sound so paranoid, Justin.
I am paranoid.
Justin,
why would that
issues.
Be? Why would that be, Eric? Anyway, I should ignore
your issues. That's why.
I certainly do, Eric. And
I mean, I should be the one that's paranoid right now.
What? Because you got something in your closet.
Mm.
Who was that? Who's that in the closet?
It was something. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. It's a cat clutching a hammer. Could it get any more strange? But yes, no, I love this movie. I've got the poster. I also bought a few years back the Greek VHS, and I think that was one of the only legitimate, even if it was legitimate, I don't know, releases of the film on VHS. I really do enjoy it. I think it's incredibly silly in a good way, and sick and twisted in the ways that only really 70s movies can be. I mean, I think we talked a little bit about the opening scene. Obviously, we've all mentioned it. And I've mentioned it before about how it was obviously John Carpenter ripped it off for the beginning of Halloween. So the film's on YouTube at the moment. The whole film's on YouTube. And also, of course, it's getting a release from Scream Factory on Blu-ray, which is fantastic, later this year, I believe. So, but if you just want to watch the beginning of the film, just watch it. It's in some ways shot for shot, like beginning of Halloween, apart from with a hammer, which is a kind of a camera point of view prowling around the side of the house, going into the kitchen, watching a hand going to draw, pulling out a hammer, and then going upstairs with the hammer in front. So it is. I've never heard John Carpenter address this, but he's. I think he's a little bit of a magpie kind of filmmaker. I think he does kind of sort of take bits and pieces from other people's films. And Halloween still is my favourite film of all time, so that isn't necessarily a bad thing. But I've also mentioned, obviously, with the Freddy Krueger mask again. I wonder if that may have been. A kind of subconscious thing back in the back of Wes Craven's mind. The other thing I thought was looking at the links, and I'm sure this was just a coincidence. It's like when the killer in the mask hovers over Ellie when she's in bed and she wakes up and sees him. And obviously, a lot of this is kind of nightmares, although not. It's not playing. You don't see the nightmares, but Ellie has lots of nightmares. So obviously, have that connection. But when she wakes up and she sees him hovering. Over her later, she says, I saw this horrible face, which reminded me a bit of Dana Kimmel's freak out in Friday 13th part 3, but I think that's probably quite tenuous. But I really liked Gloria Graham, if you mentioned in here. She's obviously slumming it in this movie in some ways, considering the film she'd done before, but she seems to be having a ball, you know. I think she was playing it as a comedy, but very straight faced. But she kind of came across as like she was kind of as bad orphan matrons go, then she's right up there with the kind of the nun in Silent Night, Deadly Night, and also she reminded me of Faye Dunaway in Mommy Dearest a little bit, with I can't imagine as far as safeguarding goes, this is a particularly good example of social care, is it? Sort of having. Teenage girls strapped onto a up in the attic.
I would imagine it would be frowned upon.
It probably would be frowned upon, but then again, this was the 70s. I also love the way at the end, it's very bizarre because there's the end where the killer, although the killer in the mask is not really a killer, is he? Really? You have to see the movie, it's a bit confusing, but when he suddenly appears at the end with the big showdown with Ellie and Mrs. Graham and the handyman, is that Gloria Graham looks completely nonplussed, but this person with a mask has suddenly turned up in her cellar with a hammer, doesn't she?
I think the only thing I could think of for that is that she's thinking, because she's already wants to get rid of the handyman herself.
Yes.
And she's just sort of deciding, like, whoever ends up surviving, maybe she'll try and do away with herself later. But
you know, this kind of reminded me a little bit of A Bay of Blood with basically that kind of, it has that feel of one person's trying to kill another and this person's trying to kill that person. And it's just kind of a free for all, I guess you'd call it. So there's really no central, I guess you'd call a central murderer, you know, to the story. It has that kind of Bay of Blood feel to me.
I can see what you're saying about the Bay of Blood feel, but for me, it's the same kind of feel in that almost every character in this movie is a villain.
Yeah,
I mean, is there any good guys?
Even the protagonists are just sleazy and just kind of.
I
won't arrest you if you marry me.
Yes.
spoiler alert! But come on, right. that's very unethical.
Well, it gets even more unethical, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It gets worse.
Yes, it does. Are we going to spoil the ending?
We should. We spoil them every time. It's our thing.
Well, if you don't want to hear the ultimate ending, it's basically skip ahead 5 minutes now. But it turns out that Ellie was actually the killer all along. She doesn't kill anyone else in the movie, I don't think. She kills her mother and her lover. The policeman fingers her, essentially. He wants to marry her.
He certainly wants to.
But then it turns out that he says that he was Ellie's mother's first lover, and Ellie was been looking for a father, and all she knew, her mother told her that her father was her first lover. So the policeman who wants to marry Ellie, after telling her he won't arrest her if she marries him, turns out to be her father. And then Ellie kind of just starts laughing maniacally. at the irony.
It's total. It's like Dynasty squared. Dynasty cubed.
But it's also, I like the look. She almost does a kind of a moonwalk away from Vic Tayback's character. During the revelation, they kind of pan out to that wide shot. She's just kind of stumbling back like a mummy almost.
But it's even more convoluted than that, because set her up to try and uncover the unethical behavior of the people running the orphanage as well. So
he's just a big douchebag, is what he is.
But it's kind of very, very bizarre kind of police work, really, wasn't it? To dress as you know, like a crispy face killer in a lumberjack shirt with a hammer.
Well, speaking of convoluted, I think he supposedly was, before he became a detective, he worked in a movie theater. And then later on, when he explains the mask, he says, oh, that's just stage makeup, as if like working in a movie theater and knowing stage makeup are the same, are mutually exclusive. So
exactly. And it's very Scooby-Doo, isn't it, when he pulls off the mask at the end, which is great. The other thing we haven't mentioned, of course, is the very strange kind of subplot of Gloria Graham has a husband in a wheelchair, dead in the freezer as well. And she says in the kind of trailer that in some ways, that although she's got all these basically these dead teenagers, and I think if you haven't seen it, I think we've kind of alluded to this, but she, or we may have said it outright actually, but when the teenagers run away, they kill the teenagers, or someone kills the teenagers, and then puts them in the freezer, and then gets them out, defrosts them, put them in bed, pretend they're ill, so when the social worker comes round and does a head count, they all appear to be there, because they don't want to lose any of the money they're getting from the welfare payments. So it's even sicker than, you know, it just keeps on getting sicker. But Graham seems to have this idea that when people are dead in the freezer, they're not actually dead. And she has her husband, Mr. Deer, in the wheelchair in the freezer as well. And some idea about bringing them all back to life at some point.
Yeah, she has her faith in modern medicine that someday they'll invent some kind of miracle cure where if they're frozen at death, they can be revived.
See, she's not all bad.
She's like Mother Teresa.
She's
coming off. Yeah, coming off that, I also like how it's kind of obvious they couldn't really. They couldn't really afford a freezer, so they used kind of a blue tinted lens to kind of give that freezer look during those scenes. I felt that.
Now, what did you guys think would have been the ultimate outcome for this new happy couple? Do you think him and his daughter wife lived happily ever after?
Yeah.
I have a feeling she would have ended up killing him with a hammer.
I think she probably would.
Well, I just hope the Supreme Court gave them the right.
Yeah.
I just thought it was...
Well, it seems like anyone can marry anyone these days. The world has gone crazy.
Yeah. Now people can go marry a tree.
Yep.
Now Eric, you would marry Vic Tayback, though, wouldn't you?
1971, yeah, but not he's dead now. So.
Well, I would hope not now.
Yeah. You can call him daddy husband.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, he might be dead, or he just might be in someone's freezer.
Well, true.
Just true. Yeah.
Actually, I just realized this is the second week in a row we've had a movie with bodies in the freezer. Oh, no, sorry, that was a fridge last week.
That was a fridge.
It's completely different, sorry.
Oh, Eric.
Yeah.
But it did remind me a little bit of the end of The Scaremaker, Girls Night Out. Mm-hmm. So, again, I doubt there's another tenuous link, but I wonder how...
Speaking of people marrying trees, what about that kid that was running away that was trying to hide from the handyman behind that tree? Wasn't he kind of marrying it?
He was kind of marrying it, yeah.
It was kind of very bizarre, wasn't it? Because he's hugging this very thin tree, wasn't he?
Yeah, as if he's on a ledge or something, but he's not.
But then the handyman throws that meat cleaver and chops his hand off, doesn't it? So he obviously had to get his hand in just so he would have a job. The other thing I liked about the extra sleaze from this all, of course, is when the handyman says to Ellie that he will help her escape if she comes down into the cellar with him, and she does. And then he says, gets out a bottle of whiskey and says, drink this, this will help you escape, and then tries to rape her, which is kind of, it's just all so inappropriate, isn't it?
But whiskey does help you escape.
It does. It does, actually.
Whiskey is where I go to cry.
Oh, Eric, how sad. Mm. I mean, in a pitiful way.
You're so mean to me.
Well, no, I mean, I don't mean... I mean, genuinely, it's genuinely pitiful, Eric. You have our sympathy.
I prefer gin and vodka anyway.
Yeah, I know you do. So, so what's it, at the end? What's Jennifer who pushes Gloria Graham into the...
I think so, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
It is, okay. I hope she got a drink.
She got a drink first, yeah.
I don't really know how she found the strength to actually push her in the freezer, but...
I love that the actress, because she's
thirsty.
Kind of...
Yeah,
I'm thirsty.
She sounds like a 1940s ghost, you know. Yes. They used to have those kind of voices. Oh, I'm thirsty. I need a drink.
So
I'm going to have to go figure out which 1940s ghost you're referring to.
I don't know, just a ghosts of yore. Those ones that have, like, sheets on them.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
So, anyway, that's another episode of Paranormal Activities. That Eric's, what could call it, nocturnal
the ghosts
missions.
Of yore.
Yes.
In the Protozoic period.
It almost reminds me when Eric kind of just pulled that out of his hat, the ghosts of yore of the Friends episode where Rachel's telling Phoebe that everything she's getting is from the colonial times because she doesn't know any other time frame. And then Ross quizzes her and he's like, what other time periods are there? And she's like, there's colonial times.
There's yore.
The days of yore. Yesteryear.
My apothecary table.
See, Justin doesn't like Friends. We all love Friends.
Well, I used to watch it back in the day, but I can't be bothered now.
I always said that.
It's pretty awful.
Well, Friends is one of those shows to me, when it's funny, it's really funny. But when it's sappy, it's painful to watch.
Yeah, when it's sappy, it is painful to watch. One thing that Joseph was saying to me during our loo break earlier is that the character of Pete, who's played by Dennis Christopher, looks like Anthony Michael Hall in the Vacation movies. And he's just appeared on my screen, and I can totally see where you're coming from now.
Yeah.
It didn't occur to me when I was watching it during the week, but now it's so bloody obvious.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Vacation.
All he's missing is the braces on his teeth.
Yeah, it's crazy. And now he's turned into Ed Helms.
Into who? What?
the new Vacation movie that's about to come out.
Yeah, right.
The reboot. All
right. Yeah.
The redo.
I'll watch that one.
Okay. Well, bringing it back to Blood and Lace, do we have anything else left to say on it, or would we like to move back on some background?
I have background, actually. I can't, if you can believe that.
Gosh. Cool. Okay. Well, do you want to regale us with some background, Joseph?
Sure. Justin and Eric, maybe even Kieran, not Nathan because he never has background. You may be able to clarify this. Apparently, the budget was $200,000, according to the Wikipedia article. Melody Patterson's dialogue in the opening scene was dubbed over by famed voice actress June Foray. After the first scene, the dialogue is again spoken by Patterson. This is director Philip S. Gilbert's only credit. The writer, Gil Lasky, his other credits include The Night God Screamed and two other titles I like, The Gay Deceivers and The Manhandlers.
Those are Justin movies.
It's
you watch them on your big screen.
It's Spanish titles. There's a Hielo Sangriento, which translates to bloody ice, I guess, for the meat freezer stuff. Vision Sangrienta, which translates to bloody vision. The Greek title, which I cannot even begin to pronounce, translates to The Secret of Girls. The Italian title, Il Martello Macchiato di Sangue, translates to The Bloodstained Hammer. And then the Swedish title, which is Den Blodiga Hammaren, which translates to The Bloody Hammer. And that is all I have, because their background on this film has been very, very difficult to find. So, anyone else?
Do you have any, Kieran?
Kieran, yes. What about you?
No, unfortunately, Dirty Dancing was playing outdoors, so I didn't have any chance to go to do any background.
Well, that's forgivable completely.
Okay, I'm just kidding. I'll give you some background if you like.
Yes.
Well, the film is shot in various locations all over Los Angeles and Orange County. As to when that actually happened, I think there's a copyright stamp of 1970 in the film, if I remember correctly. You know, Jim Fiesel, who we all remember as the electrician for this film, he has an autobiography. He also actually happened to write and direct a film called Psycho from Texas that we all might have watched. But he wrote in his autobiography that shooting happened in early 1971, but the IMDb says the first release of this film was, I think, March 17th, 1971, which seems like a pretty quick turnaround, but it's an AIP film, so it's possible. Ed Carlin, who produced it later on, was a producer for Superstition. Gil Lasky also was a producer for Spider Baby. After its initial release, it got on put on a few double bills, most memorably in May 1973 in New York with a martial arts film called, brace yourselves, Deep Thrust. It's one of those martial art porno films you've all heard about. Gloria Graham, of course, she is an Oscar-winning actress, and apparently she had an affair with and later married her stepson. And
art imitating life.
Right, and coincidentally, she's also a descendant of British royalty. Edward III through John of Gaunt. Anyway, her last movie was The Nesting, which I don't know if you all have seen it, but I think it's got one of the creepiest haunted houses in a movie, personally. Melody Patterson, before she was in this, she was a star on F Troop, which was a sitcom that was way before my time. So I don't know if any of you ever watched that. In the book Drive-In Dream Girls, she said she enjoyed working on the film. She liked Gloria Graham. She also didn't consider it to be very gory. She thought the special effects were pretty bad herself. The only part of the shoot that she didn't like was the beginning because she had the flu for about a week or two. And then after the shoot, she married Dano from Hawaii Five-O, but they're not married anymore. Len Lasser, Uncle Leo, I will always remember him actually first as the gangster who ends up in the soda machine in the film Ruby. I don't know if you've all seen that film.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, Milton Seltzer, who plays a social worker, Mr. Mullins, he's had a long career, he already had a long career in television, but I always remember him as Merlin Hinkle in one of my favorite comedies, Tapeheads. Paul Hipp, he was a cinematographer, and he was also a cinematographer for Devil Times 5 and The Boogans. Now, Louise Sherrill, who plays Ellie's mother, she also wrote and directed her own horror film, The Ghosts of Hanley House. Has anyone seen it?
No.
No.
Well, I have, and it's slightly better than Night of Horror. In fact, it even also has an opening scene in a bar. The difference is the opening scene in a bar takes place in a bar, and you can see the people in the bar and not just their feet. So, you know, it has that going for it. It's just slow and just a lot goes on, and not a lot goes on. The only thing of interest about that film is that the female lead is Tanya Roberts' sister and was married to Timothy Leary for a while. And yeah, that's it. That's all you need to know about it. There's some other interesting credits in the film, but I'll leave them to you guys if you want to talk about them.
Okay, well, I've got only a tiny bit more to add to that, and because you've covered most of what I had here. What I will say is that Melody Patterson states that her date she got married to James MacArthur from Hawaii Five-O was July the 12th, 1970, which was after shooting had finished. So I'm guessing the film was shot in the sort of early summer of 1970. The only other information I have is just some reviews from around the time. The Motion Picture Guide begrudgingly admitted that it manages to keep some tension despite murky photography and muddy sound. Variety said the pic should suffice for chill bills, which I presume is horror enthusiasts they mean. And the New York Daily News wrote that the cast tries to bring believability to the plot, but the audience couldn't help laughing in the wrong places. Terry Messina manages to stand out as a teenage sexpot. I think Terry Messina is Bunch, isn't she?
Yeah.
Moving. And then the New York Post said that the story manages to keep you guessing all the way to its macabre end, if you can stand it that long. So reviews weren't terribly positive back in the day. That's all I have, because Kieran, you were quite thorough in your research.
Thank you.
Justin?
Well, I've got a few other bits. Obviously, Gloria Graham, as you mentioned, was a Oscar-nominated actress. She was also in It's a Wonderful Life. It's one of her best known roles. Milton Seltzer was also, he played Grandpa in Sid and Nancy in 1986.
Oh, yeah.
And
Whose Grandpa did he play? Sid's?
I'm not sure. All right. I just saw it on IMDb, so I'm not sure.
No, sorry, I wasn't trying to be difficult. I was just curious.
I don't know. We'll have to go and watch it to find out. I need to rewatch that film at some point. Len Lester was also in Someone's Watching Me as Burly Man in 1978, which
I liked that.
I thought you would, yes. Elizabeth Patterson was in a film called The Immortalizer in 1989 as Nurse Bain. I'm not sure if that's a horror movie. Has anyone ever seen The Immortalizer?
No.
It sounds like a film I should have seen, but probably didn't.
It sounds like a film Nathan would enjoy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I don't know, only because it's a low-budget 80s.
Although things that usually end in Iser are kind of action movies, so maybe Joseph might like it more.
Mm, that's true. The other thing is basically the film bombed when it came out. All the Variety entries I can see for the film about its box office all saying things like it was, you know, a weak or sank badly at its bow at the Hippodrome and other stands. And so that may explain possibly why the film didn't really go on to a kind of, it didn't get picked up for home video release or any other kind of, or re-releases throughout the years. So the film was and presumably still is banned in the UK. It was banned in 1971 or 72 by the BBFC for violence. So it, as far as I'm aware, it never came out in the UK and it's never been out on home video. So obviously now it would have no problem getting a release. I think you're right.
It still wouldn't get a PG though.
No, it probably wouldn't get a PG. No. I've got a kind of a very short synopsis from the Daily Republic in Mitchell, South Dakota, from the Saturday, May the 8th, 1971. And it kind of does a little synopsis of the film, but it says at the bottom, filmed in colour, Blood and Lace has been rated GP, all ages admitted, parental guidance suggested. So again, it's kind of, I do wonder what people would have felt when they took their six-year-olds to see this. It may have been a few embarrassed faces there, but...
put on your best bib and tucker, Timmy. We're going to see Blood and Lace.
Yeah. I'm just going to see... Yes, I should say the film was definitely shot in 1970 because apparently it was filmed by, as an independent production, by Carlin Productions and is picked up by AIP for release in, a Variety says, in 1971. So there's a piece in here which says... American International Pictures has purchased the film Blood and Lace from Carlin Productions, will release next spring with Gloria Graham and Victor Tayback. So that was from December 9th, 1970. So the guy, Jim Weisler?
Who did Psycho from Texas.
Yeah, so he's probably just getting the dates. He probably was maybe filmed in March 1970. But I did have a look to see if I could find anything about the music, because obviously music is lifted from somewhere else, isn't it? And it seems to be oddly inappropriate throughout. But there's music credit just for somebody who, for, you know, credits for the music, but not actually a composer. So I don't believe there's any original score whatsoever. So I can't imagine a Blood and Lace LP album coming out.
It has kind of a Muzak feeling to it, kind of like elevator music in spaces, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's gratuitous theremin music also at the end, too.
Mm. Just one other thing is that I forgot to mention Dennis Christopher. Did nobody mention him? Who plays Pete, the one who looks like Anthony Michael Hall? He, of course, is the lead in 1980 slasher movie Fade to Black. And mm-hmm. he still is still acting today. He was recently in Django Unchained, the Tarantino movie. And the other thing is, I haven't seen this movie, but Gloria Graham was in Mansion of the Doomed, a.k.a. Massacre Mansion. Has anyone seen it?
I used to have that poster.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's the one where they take out the eyeballs, isn't it?
Yeah. That, well, that's what the poster seems to imply.
Mm. Right. Great. And great Vic poster. Tapek's in that as well.
Oh, is he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Cool. Okay. Well, Nathan, have you got anything for us?
No.
No.
But Joseph is incorrect, because during our last episode, I had a ton of background.
You did. You did indeed. Yes.
I have one little bit as well. There's a this film is somewhat related to the film E.T.
Oh, same as last week. We had an E.T. connection with Slumber Party.
No. The woman who's responsible for continuity for this film, her name is Carol Littleton. She ended up becoming like a top flight editor. So she's been an editor for films like E.T. and Dreamcatcher and films like that.
Ah, okay. Because Amy Jones was meant to be the editor of E.T., but she turned it down to do Slumber Party Massacre.
Well, there you go.
So, yeah, it's all connected. The rich tapestry of slasher moviedom.
So,
that's right.
So I kind of guess that is Blood and Lace, but Kieran, thank you ever so much for choosing it.
Yes.
I certainly enjoyed it.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Yes. Is there anything that we want to say in closing? Anything that we haven't already said?
I don't think so.
No. Okay. Well, should we go on to some feedback? Although, as we're recording a week after the last episode, probably not going to be very much. But while I play the contact details, who would like to read out the Facebook?
I will.
Okay. Well, I've played the contact details and I'll come back in with that in a second. And this is how you can get in touch with the show.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continuums@gmail.com.
Oops.
Oh, Eric, your love bead's going off again.
Yeah. Apologies. Okay.
So do we have any feedback apart from the Facebook?
No feedback this week.
No.
Okay. Oh. Well, you can have plenty of time.
Not very many Facebook things either. I guess not a lot of people have seen this film.
Mm. Okay, well, hopefully we'll be introducing this to a lot of people. And also with the Scream Factory release on Blu-ray, I'm sure a lot more people will discover its charms.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Mentier writes, "Sweet, Blood and Lace, good choice." So,
cool.
Yeah.
Short and sweet. Short and sweet. Thank you, Matt.
Lauren Gillian wrote, or Gillian? I don't know. She writes, or he writes, the names are so unisex these days. This person writes, "Blood and Lace is amazing, especially if you use Patrick K. Walsh's review as a commentary," whatever that means. So, thank you.
Well, has he covered it on Screen Queens? I haven't heard that episode. Must be an older one.
I have no idea.
When do you get a man called Lauren?
Yeah.
I've met a man named Lauren before.
Oh, yeah. It's usually like Loren, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jesse Gandy writes in, "I thought Blood and Lace was pretty light on the slasher element. That was disappointing. It reminded me of House of Whipcord. It also features Uncle Leo from Seinfeld. Did you know that Uncle Leo was in Seinfeld?" No Alan Dale in Blood and Lace, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And that's it for our Facebook shenanigans this week.
Okay, well.
I expect later when we reveal Eric's pick, there's going to be even less.
Possibly.
Yeah, because I'd never even heard of Eric's pick.
Neither did I.
In fairness, it's a listener pick, so I'm not taking the blame.
Yeah, okay. Well, talking of Eric, maybe it's time for You Know What.
Yes.
It's my joke of the week. It's so freaking fantastic.
Okay, Milton Seltzer, who plays Mr. Mullins in Blood and Lace, did you know that he's very good at helping his nieces and nephews when they feel sick? Because to them, he's Uncle Seltzer.
I don't get it.
Alka-Seltzer, Uncle Seltzer. Yeah.
That was very good, actually. I thought that was very good.
Was.
Considering you said how awful.
Oh, well, you're talking about like the medicine.
Yeah,
help people when they're sick. Oh, I get it now.
Yeah. That was good.
Thank you.
Because usually, Eric, you usually tell jokes that make the trombone player from the town of Dread Sundown cry.
It takes a lot to make him cry.
Eric's getting bullied by our guest.
I know.
Yeah.
Fair. It's so unfair.
Oh, poor Eric.
Oh. There she is.
Yep. So, well... I think we're coming to an end, aren't we? This is going to be a short one, as all Eric's lovers have said. But Eric, are you going to tell us what we've got next time?
Okay, on the next episode, a listener pick from Paul Chandler, a friend of mine, and he has asked us to cover the recent Brit movie, which has very tenuous slasher connections, but I think is utterly brilliant, Sightseers.
Indeed, yes. Very good film. So I'm looking forward to covering that one. Although, as you say, there's murders and people
being
murdered.
Yeah.
So there is that.
And
link.
There's laughs as well.
Yes, it's a black comedy. So, but I take it that's not one that Nathan and Joseph have seen, is it?
I'd never even heard of it until
me either.
Until he mentioned it to me.
What's the director's name again? It's the guy who did Kill List and.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
What was that?
It's that guy. Yeah.
That guy. So have you seen
Ben Wheatley?
Ben Wheatley.
Yeah.
Okay. I have not seen it yet, but I do own it.
Okay. Well, there you go. So it is available in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's good.
But, yeah, because if it wasn't available like in the shops or something, you wouldn't be able to see it.
Oh, no. Well, that's true.
There'd be no way of seeing this. Yeah.
Indeed. But we will be back because I'm off on holiday for 2 weeks. Well, not for another 2 weeks. But anyway, it all should be fairly seamless, hopefully. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks after this.
Oh, by the way, the nurse in Blood and Lace is played by a character called Mary Strawberry, which made me want to sing, "We wish you a Mary Strawberry and a happy new pineapple." I haven't been drinking.
Yeah.
You should have left it at the joke, Eric.
Yeah.
I bet you Mary Strawberry left
extra,
my joke.
Extra long bell and wind this week.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, thank you to Kieran again for coming on. It's always a pleasure. And I hope
now you can go back to bed.
You can go back to bed, yeah. So it must be about, is it about coming up to 5 in the morning, isn't it, in where you are?
Yeah,
and
about
you haven't been attacked, have you? Yet.
No, fingers crossed.
You're right, okay. So
I think Kieran now has the record for earliest guest appearance on the show.
Must
I think
be,
he beat Michael by an hour.
I did.
Yeah.
Hold on, Lisa. Did you hear that? Hold on 1 second.
Is he going to do it?
Justin's got Stalker, I think.
It's Argento.
No, it's Ellie. With her hammer
cam.
Yes?
Hello.
Well, if he wasn't a whore, then Ellie wouldn't kill him.
Well, yeah, it's his own fault for being a whore. Where has he gone?
Sorry, I'm here. I'm back. Sorry, that's supposed to be thrilling for you. So, no, it's Argento who's trying to get in, and he was making some very sad noises, like a sad trombone.
But Nathan called you a whore.
Did you, Nathan?
Well, Eric said that Ellie was trying to kill you, and the only reason Ellie kills is if somebody's a whore.
I'm shocked, Justin. I'm really shocked. I'm
very
sorry.
Shocked.
I'm sorry that that Nathan said such horrible things about you.
Well, yeah, I'm shocked. Actually, I'm more shocked actually by the state of Argento's bottom. So I better sign off. So keeping it classy. Well, I've lost my appetite.
It's a good thing his name's not Fulci.
Oh.
Well, we did have a cat called, well, not, there was a cat called Fulci, where we nicknamed, he looked like a really grizzled old tomcat. So we called him Fulci. He had one eye. But
you know, this is actually an interesting topic. We should bring it up at some point. Like, have you ever had pets named after anything horror movie related?
Well, yes. But have you, Nathan?
Well, I got
Axel.
My dog's Axel.
Axel, that's right. Yeah.
After
Axel Rose.
My Axel Bloody Valentine.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, anyway, before we witter on, I do need to do some emergency grooming. So ew. I better go now. But thank you again, Kieran. And we'll play out. Should we play out with some MC Hammer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Since I'm from the East Bay, definitely.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you for listening. And say goodbye to the good people. And see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, hi, Ellie.
Stop it. Stop it. It's funny, my microphone smells of curry. That's a bit odd, isn't it?
That is odd.
Hello, Nathan.
Yeah, I'm listening to you right now.
Excellent. Okay. Eric. Right,
God, you Eric. Swear it was 6 o'clock in the morning the way he's acting.
Is there anything else we need to talk about before we start?
My winkle?
Well, no, that won't take very long, Eric. So,
ooh. I'm watching the heart-to-heart between Ellie and that dreamy boy that she likes in the woods.
He's so dreamy.
He's so dreamy. I love his hair.
I'm watching Uncle Leo take the crowbar from Anthony Michael Hall.
Well, Justin's taking a while, isn't he?
He must be doing a big poo.
Yeah, probably so.
He's probably cleaning up cat shit.
Yeah, because I do regularly give him a good Googling.
Hello?
In fact... Hello.
And then Eric, you know what I said? I said, yeah, but Justin's bum is only 4 inches tall. Next time we'll only make you get up at maybe 4 or 5.
Yeah.
I'd appreciate it.
There's no doubt. Light a fire and pee it out. Don't like it? Kiss my rump. Just for a minute, let's all do the bump.
Is that MC Hammer, I take it?
It's the Family Guy version of...